you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 224 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyler, your host as usual. Today, my guest is Allison Henderson. Allison is an advanced body language expert. In fact, she's one of only 26 individuals worldwide who are certified in the field of subconscious behavior observation, which is called movement pattern analysis. And we're going to hear from Allison, her understanding of the next level of communication for attorneys and those in the legal field on the message that's conveyed through body movement and how that works with the oral communication in a open air setting or in a video conferencing setting. So we're going to talk about all of that in the next few minutes. So I hope that you enjoyed this. I got a lot out of it. It was really informative, and I could see a lot of applications to the legal community. So I hope you feel the same way after listening to Allison Henderson. Allison Henderson, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, thanks so much, Neil, for having me.
Well, I'm delighted that you could join us today, Allison. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, I am a body language expert. I have a certification in what's called movement pattern analysis, which is a fancy way for saying we observe behavior and connect it to the decision-making processes that are going on in someone's mind. So I do a lot of work with helping people observe others in their world, whether it be for leadership or sales or jury selection, all those sorts of things. It's a fascinating topic, and I love to share and talk about it, which is, you know, how we found each other, which somebody knew what I do and knew about your podcast and said, hey, you two should talk. And so I'm really just grateful to be here.
Well, it's terrific. Now, you mentioned that you are certified in this discipline. And as I recall from reading, one of only 26 people in the country or the world?
That's actually worldwide.
Worldwide, 26 people.
Very boutique business, yeah.
That's interesting. What was involved in the certification, if I may ask?
It started with a 2-year process in kind of a more basic level that's called law body movement analysis. And then they have a second tier where you become certified in the movement pattern analysis section, which is learning how to observe very specific moments in time on someone's behavior and interpreting that for what it means for that decision-making process. So the assessments that I am trained to do, it's very similar to a Myers-Briggs or a DISC or something like that, except we don't do any psychometric testing. There's no questions that we ask you on a computer. We literally have a conversation and we are watching your movement to see what patterns emerge. Everybody has a movement pattern, just like you have a thumbprint, and that is what is tied to that decision-making process. It's also why you recognize someone walking in an airport or walking down the street. Before you can really tell that that's your friend or your relative, you're like, I think that's them. It's because of the way they move. It's their signature of how they move through the world. And that's what the certification is. So the second training is about, it's not 2 years in in, you know, day by day. It's not like going to a master's degree or something where you're in class every day. It's more of a week long, and then you have some weekends, and then you do another week long, and you have a few more weekends. So it, because we need time to practice observing in between. So it is, depending on how fast people go through it, it can take anything from like 18 months to say 3 years. It's very much an apprentice kind of training program, where it's very few students at a time with their certified instructor.
Well, it's fascinating, and I think we all intuitively understand this concept, and we've practiced it ourselves or realized it ourselves when we see somebody's approaching us and, oh, I knew it was you, I could tell by the way you walk. Or you see somebody from behind or from the side, you can't really see who their face, but you can tell from their mannerisms that that's who you think it is. Because as you said, people have an identifiable body pattern, and some more obvious than others, some more impressionable but than others. But I think if you're trained to know what to look for, you can start and see these patterns in types of groupings and make some decisions about the individual based on that. Is that like kind of the approach?
Absolutely. You really did nail it. It all comes down to being able to pick out certain things. And of course, when I train someone, they don't learn to observe the way that I'm trained, but there are certain things that you can look for to help you figure out, for instance, that jury member is going to come at this case from a very technical and information side. And that works well for us because our case is very information oriented. So I definitely want that juror. Whereas this other person, they look like they're more hands-on and they're very action oriented and process oriented. We don't connect the dots very well in this case because we just don't really have that good timeline and that good process for how this all went down. And so maybe we don't want that juror, because that person is going to have a hard time accepting the information that we're going to give them based on the way that they process. There's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad for how someone processes information. It's just different. And that's also where the tension and the friction comes in our offices and with our teams. It's not so much personal. We take so many things much more personally than we really should in the office. And that's kind of where I even came to this certification. Was I was working in offices and noticing that there was so much drama going on and so much, you know, water cooler talk and kind of backstabbing and things, and there's got to be something you can do about this. It can't possibly, like, your life and business should not be this way. And it really comes down to, oh, I understand now why you made that comment or where you're coming from, because you process this way and I process in this total opposite style. And that's why we're having these friction in this issue. So if I come back with my communication a little bit differently to match your process, we're going to smooth things over and we're going to have a much more productive and time efficient way of communicating.
Well, I think this is really important for attorneys, whether they be transactional attorneys or litigation attorneys. There's always, the craft that we deal in fundamentally is communication, whether it be written communication or oral communication. But right now we're talking about oral and visual communication. And to the extent that you can use some of this understanding, some of these techniques to better decipher the meaning and the intent behind the communication, I think the better off you're going to be. And I suppose that, coherency is really important as well. You know, my mother used to say, well, I heard the words that came out of your mouth, but your body wasn't conveying the same message. And I suspect that that's a thing you look for when you're doing body movement analysis, whether they're the words and the communication, the oral communication is congruent with the body language.
Right. Anytime that I work with anyone on their presentation skills or their executive presence, that is one of the key factors that I'm looking for, because so often, particularly in management, we are given the task of disseminating information that isn't ours. And if we don't really believe in that information, or for example, it could be a new bonus plan or a new insurance policy or something that's coming down the pike, and it becomes that manager's job to convince the workforce that this is better, or that they should adopt this new program, mm-hmm. or this new insurance policy or something. And if they can't find something or someplace that they believe in it, it will come across as false. Like, there's nothing they can do because their body will always betray them. Because, and this happens to folks all the time when somebody else writes the copy, or when somebody else gives them, and there's so many scripts out there, particularly for sales and things. And that sometimes drives me nutty, because I'm like, can't just hand somebody the words, and if it doesn't match their body, they're never going to be successful at that, because the way that I communicate is going to be different than the way that you communicate. And if we don't create that script or adjust it to fit each person's personality and communication style, it just falls flat. And that's why there are times when you feel like, oh my gosh, like, I just was sold and I don't even know how I said yes to that. It just went so smoothly. Most likely, the person that you were communicating with was very similar to you, and it just felt really great. So part of the trick, if you will, is figuring out that communication style of the person you're talking to, how they need you to speak to them. And when you're like, oh, this is what I need to be saying in order to be more persuasive. And for attorneys, that could be persuasive to use your law firm. That could be persuasion in the courtroom. That could be persuasion with a judge. It could be any one of those areas. But the same rules that I teach apply mm-hmm. in any situation, which is great. People don't have to think of something different when they're in a different situation. It really is the same, because human behavior is the same.
And I know we all have seen this as attorneys when we're negotiating or trying to be persuasive. And I can recall cases when I was doing family law cases where opposing counsel is advocating one position on behalf of their client. But I can tell that from the body language that the attorney is not all that sold on that position, and maybe that's an area where there could be some movement if we can come to grips with everything. And same way with mediating contract disputes or civil litigation, where again you can tell by the congruence between the oral communication and the body language, what is really important and what is less important, and maybe just be posturing on behalf of the client. So those are really important skills to kind of pick up on.
Absolutely agree with you on that. I think there is sometimes it's very difficult to, because you are working on behalf of the client, and if they are really pushing for one particular argument or something, you may not have a lot of choice. And that's where you may even want to look at different people. If you have a small team, of turning it over to someone who can give the information in a little bit more persuasive way, because it fits their own personality a little bit better. Sometimes people are shocked, or they kind of come back to me and they're like, well, I always close, or I always, it's kind of a strict jobs, within the firm. And sometimes they say, but I could just tell you from your the way you're going to come across to that jury, this other person on your firm will probably give that argument in a more persuasive way. So you may want to look at making sure that you've introduced them throughout the trial in some little bits and pieces way or something, so that if you decide to make that switch to someone else giving an argument, that that it's not a shock to the jury that they realize, oh, that's just part of the team, and now somebody else is, you know, taking the reins.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics now, in terms of body movement, body language, that we should be sensitive to. What are some of the things we should be looking out for? And conversely, are there things that we can essentially coach ourselves up to do to, in terms of body movement, that would lend more persuasion to our argument?
The biggest thing that I think people need to be aware of is their own variety. Especially when it comes to arguments, if you have more than, say, two or three people in the room, you are most likely going to have a variety of decision makers in that room and styles in that room. And therefore, you need to be using as much variety as you can in your delivery, both verbal cues and nonverbal, to attract and to gain trust and empathy from as many people in the room as you can. And the issue usually becomes people tend to stay in a very narrow focus of movement. They tend to kind of move in that certain way that they're really comfortable in. So a lot of my training with attorneys has been opening their eyes to a wider variety of movement so that they are encouraging more and more people to like, know, and trust them.
Well, give me an example of a different type of movement that you might suggest to someone to incorporate. Are we talking about using their hands more, being more expressive with their facial, you know, expressions, or kind of concretely, what are we talking about?
Mm-hmm. One of the best ways to describe it would be to think in terms of opposites. So, for instance, if someone has a habit of using a lot of pressure with their gestures, and I'm sure everybody's seen that type of communicator where the hands go up and down and they add a lot of pressure, and this is really important. This is the first thing that happened, and the second thing, and the third thing, and it comes through their voice, and they're very pragmatic and forceful.
Right.
And that is that's a signal, that is a way to come across, but that if there are people in the room for whom that is too strong, or they're like, wow, they're really bombastic, or if it reminds them of somebody from their past that they didn't like that had that style, they're going to be turned off to that particular way of moving. So that individual likes to use pressure. So what I tell them to do is pick places to do the opposite. So instead of being very heavy and weighted about things, then you lighten up with your gestures and your voice lightens a little bit, and you're still, the signal's still the same. It's still pressure. It's still going to feel okay to the communicator because that's what their preference is to use pressure. But instead of only using heavy pressure, maybe there are times that we lighten as well. And that can be a breath of fresh air because there's that variety thing. And people listen and people pick up when things change. When communication is too one note, not only monotone with the voice, but if it's monotone in the body as well, the same repetitive gesture over and over and over, your listeners tune out because they've seen it all before. They feel like they don't have to pay attention because they know what's happening. The minute you do something different, they're like, oh, wow, okay, this is new, this has changed. And they will re-engage and they'll listen again. So just from that pressure to being very, perhaps even loud to soft, you know, even vocally, you can do a lot of play with, and if your voice changes, generally it goes to your body as well. And so if somebody's very hard and hard-edged, and then they lighten up and they say, therefore, XYZ, and it just softens. People will lighten up. Oh wow. And you want them to keep re-engaging. You want them to keep their attention, whether it be your jury or whether it be opposing counsel, whoever it is, obviously, you want them to continue their active listening. So pressure would be would be one. Mm-hmm. Some people just simply move in the same direction all the time. Maybe they just open and close their hands constantly, or they do a lot of what we, you know, that steepling where you put your fingers together in kind of a little triangle, sure. which became really big a while ago. I don't know that it's as big now, but for a while that little steepling was I'm important and I am intelligent and I know what I'm talking about. That was the universal signal for that. And again, if they only are doing that over and over and over again, then I would suggest for them, you know what, instead of only just opening and closing, think about moments where you can gesture forwards and backwards. Because when you gesture forwards and then bring people back to you, you're literally giving the gesture that you're bringing them in and we're all in this together, because you're reaching out and then you're pulling the audience towards you. It's simple things that just to break up and give that variety. Would be really, really helpful. And you can do that. You don't need me. You can videotape yourself and see what habits you have. You can ask other people in your firm or your friends. You can even ask your family members if you have somebody that you trust to give you an honest answer. And that can be difficult because oftentimes people go, oh, you're fine, or oh, yeah. But seriously, I want to know what it is that I do. What do, if you had to perform me for Saturday Night Live, what's the one thing that I do that you would caricature? What is the habit that I have that you see in me all the time? Because that's a really great place to start. Because you can take that one habit and you can figure out what the opposite is of that one particular signature move that you have and add variety, you know, one step at a time.
I can, you know, tell you from personal experience and doing a lot of, you know, video conferencing, which we'll talk about here shortly. Looking back at the recordings, recognize that I have this really annoying habit of looking up and to the right. I don't know what I'm looking at. But if you watch any of the videos that I've done, I keep looking up and to the right. So my most recent ones, I've been trying to stay focused on the camera on the computer because it's, and of course, once you see it, you can't stop seeing it.
You can't, you're right, that whole, I can never unsee it. Yes. Yeah. And we are the most critical of ourselves, which is why Zoom is so uncomfortable for most people, right. Because there's that little box where they're watching themselves. So one of the best things people can do is I'm always like, do you know you can turn that off? And yeah. Sometimes they're like, really, I can turn that off? Yes, in Zoom, they hide it. But you can find in the little three dots next to the mute in blue on your box, if you click those three dots, the drop-down menu, and there's something that says turn self-view off or something to that effect. And you can literally turn your square off so you don't have to watch yourself. But in your case, if you're looking up and to the right, you're probably... that's where your thoughts are, or
yeah, that's where my thought bubble is. I'm looking up at the thought bubble.
and you're looking for your own advice, or you're looking for your own words. Exactly. I mean, but I will tell you that most likely it only really bothers you.
Right, probably. We're always most critical of ourselves.
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. Let me ask you a couple other questions before we get onto specifically the topic of Zoom. I suppose you can overdo it to the point where your body language is inconsistent with your real personality.
Yes, that would be the performance mode.
Yeah,
I'm sure we've seen everybody that they turn on,
right,
quote unquote, and it kind of looks like they're suddenly on stage or something. I usually only have to say, remember, somebody's watching you all the time. And if it's not believable that you're the same person in the hallway as you are in the conference room, there's a problem.
and we see that in the law all the time. And again, I don't want to cast dispersions at litigators, but being a former litigator, I saw it all the time, where opposing counsel was one type of communicator in the hallway, and as soon as they got behind the table in front of the court, it became a totally different animal. And sometimes it worked to their advantage, but oftentimes, I would say it was that performance persona was just clearly evident that it was just a performance. And I don't think that helps your communication style.
Right. I mean, the jury is like, I don't know how much I believe you.
Right.
Right. Because there's something that's disingenuous about it. And I always say, remember, the jury is watching you when you go to sidebar. They're watching you when you go confer with your team. They're watching you all the time. And it's the signals that you're giving need to be consistent. It is the, for lack of a better word, the volume from which you use them that changes. So we will believe somebody when they turn to the people on their team, of course, everything comes down and you're not going to be gesturing as large, or you're not going to give as many signals maybe, but they should be pretty consistent then when you turn back around and address the court. And it's kind of a volume level. It's like turning things up and reeling them back, versus making an entire character change when you address the court. And I think a lot of it's because there isn't, when I talk to attorneys, I used to avoid this industry when I first started because I wrongly assumed there's no way you weren't taught this in law school. There have to be, right? Why would they not teach the presentation skills or body language or how to persuasion? And when I started to talk to attorneys and they're like, no, we really learn on the job. It's a trial by fire, or you have a mentor. Maybe you had an 8-week course in litigation, but most of what we do in law school is case law.
Yeah.
And isn't necessarily the presentation piece. And I was like,
this is one of the many things about actually being an attorney that isn't taught in law school, how to communicate, how to use persuasive language and body movement and the like. Let me ask you one last question there that's been bugging me. Do people adopt the body language of others? I know there's a phenomena that, if we're speaking with someone who has a particular speech pattern or an accent, there are times when you find yourself almost mimicking, to some case, to our own chagrin, to an extent, but you find yourself mimicking the other person. Does that happen with body language as well? That you unconsciously, if you're communicating well, find yourself reflecting the other person's body movement in your own movement?
It does. It happens all the time. It's what we call empathetic movement. When you start to pick up the the habits of others. Uh-huh. And I will say, honestly, I think that's a great thing because that means you are really listening and you are actually paying attention and your body is responding. What happens more often than not is that we are listening to respond and we aren't really taking in all of the cues and we're not observing the way that we could. And so we don't have that empathetic movement going on. And some people just call that mirroring. And I've been told many times, oh, I'm fine because I know how to mirror. I'm like, well, that's great. But have you ever been caught doing right. it? Because that's forced empathetic movement. Mirroring right. is where right. if somebody crosses their leg, you wait like a count of three and then you cross your leg. Or if they scratch your nose, then you wait a few beats and then you scratch your nose. I mean, it's very tricky to do really well. Sure. But I also think that takes you out of communication because then you're counting in your head. Okay, beat one, two, three. Now I'm going to move like they do. And that's just false. When it happens organically, empathetic movement can be really, really useful.
Because is that what you mean by listening with your eyes?
Yes. I love to say that we're listening with our eyes. Because yes. That is a way to really be present because you can't plan your next word and really observe the movement of another person at the same time. It's very difficult to multitask in that way. And there are times when we do need to kind of be planning a little bit as we go, but the more you can really observe, and that's when I was talking about the pressure example of somebody using a lot of pressure, you would be observing that. So listening with your eyes is listening to their words, but then saying, okay, what's happening with their body at the same time? Wow, I'm seeing a lot of pressure here. That means this person's a very determined individual. They like to go straight through. They don't like to go around things. So I'm going to have to be prepared that this person's going to stick to their guns. Maybe if it's price or if it's they have a certain way they think their case should be presented, I know that, okay, they're going to really be difficult to persuade to go in a different direction. So you're observing that, which prepares you for your next move, basically, right? It's kind of all a big chess match where you're observing them so that you can prepare for how you're going to communicate your next steps with them. And it may be instead of meeting them and if they're going to fight back, in a sense, if they're going to meet pressure, don't meet pressure with pressure. What usually happens is we respond in a way that is similar instead of perhaps using that might be where you might use the opposite as the lawyer. Instead of coming in with heavy pressure, you might go in with lightness to try to get them to move and see your point of view. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I think those are really great, valuable points. However, we've done a lot of research, and we believe that maybe this other option might sway more of our jurors. So do you mind, could we take a look at that? And coming in with lightness instead of disregarding their points or saying, we know better. This is exactly, no, we shouldn't be doing that. We need to be going down path B, which is meeting pressure with pressure. And that oftentimes is what happens because we as humans become really defensive very quickly. And when we don't hear what we want to hear, we might become defensive and meet pressure with pressure. And that's just usually never going to work. All it does is escalate things and make our clients frustrated.
That it reminds me a little bit of a guest that we had on back on episode 112, one of my favorite Australian keynote speakers, Neen James, who wrote a book called Attention Pays. And one of the key things in her book was that you need to pay attention to the person you're speaking with. And the way you pay attention is not just with your ears, but absolutely with your eyes. So it's a very consistent message there. Let's wrap up here then, Allison, and talk about what we're all going through right now as a result of the pandemic. And that is a plethora of Zoom conference meetings, video conference meetings. And, you know, we have that little box, as we said, on the screen, and you can have a one-on-one video conference or a one-to-many video meeting. And, you know, it's body language and movement is somewhat restricted because by the little box, but it becomes even more important, I would think, because you are restricted to that little box. So talk to us for a couple of minutes here about what your observations are with respect to movement and Zoom or video conferencing.
Oh, love this topic. This is one of my favorites. And I know before we got on the recording, we were talking about my TEDx talk that was all about Zoom, and we switched over to Zoom. And it's all about chest and shoulders, right? Head, chest, and shoulders. That's really all we have to go on right now. And the good news is there's a lot you really can take away from shoulder movement, which is kind of interesting. But the downside of that is many people don't use their shoulders or their chest very much, particularly men. That buttoned up tie, coat, jacket restricts the upper body movement, and that can be an issue. So usually with men, I tell them if you can, if it's not required or you don't feel like you're totally dressing down too much, take the jacket off and at least let your upper body breathe a little bit so that the movement that you do exhibit can show a little bit more. And the other good news that I have for all of those people that are experiencing Zoom fatigue right now is that the shoulders and chest, that's where we show collaboration. That's where our relationship signals lie. And if you think about it, when you hug somebody, what are we moving? We're moving our shoulders and our chest to embrace. When we are showing empathy, if we soften because somebody's going through something and we're empathizing with them, or we watch young couples, I think I said this on my TEDx talk, when we watch young people fall in love, right, we kind of soften our chest. We're like, oh, isn't that sweet? Look at them. They're walking hand in hand. Or this is so that parts of the body that we do see on Zoom is one of our great communicators for relationship and collaboration. And that's what we need to be focusing on, is that we use those parts of the body in order to show that. If you only have your screen where it only shows your face, I would suggest you scoot back a little bit. The more body language you can exhibit, the better. Posture is really important. Too many people are sitting all the way back in their chairs. Those big black rolly executive chairs are a nemesis for Zoom, my opinion, because they kind of trap you in it and then you're not moving enough. So sit on the edge of your chair, have really great posture, up your energy a little bit. We go from 3D person to 2D on the screen, and that takes away some of your energy. So you may not look like yourself in person when you're on the screen. And it's easy for us to think that people are then depressed, or that something's wrong, or they're angry because their energy level is off. So if we up our energy just a little bit, use that upper body, and you'll find that it becomes more face-to-face then. I was talking to, I think it was a blogger for something, come to think of it. I'm not sure when that's coming out. And one of his comments was, wow, this really is more like a real conversation with you on Zoom. And I said, well, thank you very much. I'm working hard on that. But it was because there was more movement and more to see. And the same, I mean, I think attorneys can really help with depositions by giving some of these tips to the folks that are going to be doing these Zoom depositions and things, that they need to up their energy a little bit. Hey, still dress, don't wear pajamas for your deposition, please. But some of it's taking control and developing a best practices that they send to the people that are going to be on these calls. And I've even heard some scary thoughts of perhaps some courts going to Zoom a jury selection, which is crazy, but it may be happening. And so how do we observe people with just the box?
I'd like to make two pleas to the Zoom community to please, please, please elevate the camera to face level. Okay.
Yes.
Stop doing Zoom calls from your laptop, sitting in your lap, looking up at your face. Because if you want that facial expression, if you want that body movement translated on the screen, it's got to come from a front on viewpoint. It can't be looking up your nose. And it's just, I just can't understand why people can't look at the screen and they see themselves and realize that is not a good angle to assist in your communication skills. So that's my first plea.
And fix your lighting. And then, put the light in front of you.
And then that was going to be my second point. Fix the lighting. You know, a grayed out or backlit setting is just going to wash you out, and you lose all of these nuances of expression, connection, of the body language that you are speaking of. You lose all of that if you have a bad angle and bad lighting. Now, people can forgive a lot, but they won't be able to pick up the entirety of your communication if you fail on those two points. So, right, you know, get those law school books that are still sitting on your shelf. Put them underneath your laptop.
And it's crazy too. I mean, for a while, I was so upset and I kept sort of yelling at my television screen because I was annoyed at all these reporters that were doing it wrong too. I mean, like, how you're not setting a good example at all, any of you, by the way you're doing your reporting. Or they didn't seem to be telling any of their experts from wherever that they had on the other side of the Zoom call, they weren't giving them these tips of, hey, you got to lift your screen and you got to have good lighting. And they've gotten better because now they all have green screens, I think, at home and things. But at the beginning, I was shocked at how awful supposedly people in the business.
Where is their director? Where is their director? Who's in their ear telling them?
Who's telling you to do this? And it just undermines your authority and it undermines
your communication.
It really does. So particularly when you need to be the expert or you need to be the executive here, you need to come across like one.
Allison, we need to wrap this up here. So why don't we do so by having you share with the audience how they can reach out to you if they want to find out more about advanced body language expertise and body movement analysis. What's the best way to reach you?
Well, obviously, the website is always a great place to start. It's very simple. It's movingimageconsulting.com. I also have a great YouTube channel with lots and lots of tips and even Zoom communication things. And now I'm moving on into mask communication as well, because who knows where we're going with that. And if you just go to YouTube and you look up Moving Image Consulting, you'll find me there. As well, those are probably the two great places to find me. But you can always email me too. It's just Allison, Alison, one of everything, at movingimageconsulting.com.
Well, perfect. I did spend a lot of time on your website. There's a lot of great information on the website, particularly like, you know, the blog post that you've written. There's a lot of good stuff there. Woe is me. Now I have another YouTube channel rabbit hole to go down. So more for me to do on the treadmill, right?
Absolutely. Usually my stuff is pretty short, though. That's the one good thing. I try to keep them to 3 or 4 minutes so that you can do them in short bites.
Terrific. Allison, thank you ever, ever so much for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
This has been such a pleasure, and I very much appreciate you understanding the importance of the nonverbal communication.
Thanks again. Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists and Jurisdiction. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility, and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.